Okay, Thomas, so this is your first call, and we've been talking a bit. And from what you've been telling me, you have been struggling. You're having trouble with concentration, and that you're future oriented, of sitting for 30 minutes or an hour, patting yourself on the back to get some value later because you didn't get anything out of it right now. Okay, this is highly typical. This is, in fact, the way that the Mahasi is taught. And it's the way that almost all meditation teachers teach it, because that's the way they've been taught, which is actually ordinary human beings. That's the way that our society works. But that's not the teachings of the Buddha. That starting from the very beginning, the Buddha says that he teaches only one thing, both formerly and now, and that is dukkha, dukkha nirodha. And the way that you're practicing it is dukkha, dukkha, dukkha. Let me look at some dukkha. Let me pat myself on the back for putting up with dukkha. And someday there'll be dukkha nirodha. And that's not the practice. That's not what he teaches. What is the teaching is just to come out of the dukkha right when you see it. It does not be investigated other than to see that this is dukkha. Now, what do we mean by dukkha? We can talk about it in several different ways. One of the ways to talk about it is it's just not satisfying. You're putting up with your meditation, but it is not giving you the benefit. So you're dissatisfied with your practice. Another perhaps closer way to look at it is that thoughts of dukkha, the hindrances, in fact, are the things that hinder us from being in a state of satisfaction right now. And that satisfaction is exactly opposite of the dukkha, the dissatisfaction. So if you can get into a state of satisfaction, real satisfaction, where you're absolutely comfortable with the way things are and things are good enough right now, then you've gotten everything that Buddha teaches. Because that's all he teaches, is to come out of your dissatisfaction into a state of satisfaction. Not into some glory hole, not on the top of some mountain, not on the high bliss, not in enlightenment the way that they think about it, but to come to a state of satisfaction, which means to come out of our state of dissatisfaction. And yet so few people ever spend any time at all in the state of satisfaction. Just like the way that you're practicing being dissatisfied. So if you practice being dissatisfied, practicing a meditation that you have to put in the work and you're not getting the benefit out of it right now, you're practicing dissatisfaction because that's what you've got. If you practice long enough and hard enough, then you're going to have a perfect dissatisfaction. You're going to be completely dissatisfied. And in fact, that reminds me of a story. It's in the Majjhima Nikaya, and I think it's number 56, I think. And it is the story of the dog duty ascetic. Now, I won't go into all the details of that sutta, but basically the dog duty ascetic, they still have those in India. When I was in India, I'd actually seen guys that were practicing that, which means that they live like a dog. They often walk around on all fours. They eat food off of the ground. They don't eat it out of a plate unless the plate's put on the ground. And so this guy came to the Buddha and started talking about it. And the Buddha was actually interested in speaking to him about karma, because you've already mentioned karma, so we can continue with that. And the Buddha asked this guy these questions. And that is that actually he was answering the question of the guy when he was asking. And the Buddha said that if you practice this dog duty aesthetic good enough, long enough, well enough, you'll wind up a dog. And if you fail at it, you will wind up in hell. Okay? So, what we practice is what we get. Right? So, if he fails at it, then that's what you're doing. You're dissatisfaction with your practice, but if you fail at it and quit, now you're in hell.
Yeah. So,
the law of karma actually is not a law, it's just a practical piece of advice. And yet when it's been turned into a law, they make it very formalized in the sense if you do good stuff, you get good results. And if you do bad actions, you'll get bad results. But in this particular sutta, the Buddha brought it differently than that. He added a third, which was neither. Or excuse me, it was both mixed, because almost all of our actions are mixed motives. The motives are mixed in the sense that we want things, and so we do stuff in order to get things. We're future-oriented. So the karma that you're building up is the actions that you're getting, you think are good actions, but in fact they wind up being mixed at best. And you're not getting the real benefit out of it.
Right. Yeah. Because I think it is. It's not, my practice is not entirely future oriented, because I do try to, you know, and I try to listen to instructions to enjoy the sensation of breathing. But it's definitely mixed. And it's if I can veer it more towards really focusing on the pleasure of in and out breathing, and this, as you said, the satisfaction here and now, as opposed to the dukkha, then if I can orientate it more in that direction as much as possible, then I imagine my practice will benefit.
All right. Well, the Buddha then had a fourth kind of karma.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth kind of karma is the karma that is neither bright nor dark. And it has results that are neither bright nor dark. They're just okay. They're satisfying. They're satisfactory. They're not over the hill good, and they're not bad.
Mm.
All right. So this is the way that we would practice, is practice for getting the benefit out of our practice right now without expecting anything for the future. And because while we're practicing correctly, we're not generating any bad results from it.
Okay. Yeah.
And so if we can take that as the starting point, we can begin to see then that the Four Noble Truths is all about looking at the dissatisfaction, recognizing that it's got a cause. Now, this is this second noble truth, the cause of dukkha, actually slaps the face of rebirthers. Why? Because they believe that the karma, that there are the bad experiences that they're having now, is due to a past life, which is not them. And that they're practicing now for some future life. But the real source of dukkha is our momentary greed. Right here, right now, we are greedy, and we are also in a state of not liking what we do have, and we do this ignorantly. In other words, it's not an outside force. It's not the old, dead, long dead past. It's something that we're doing right now. And that if we stop doing that right now, we'll go into the third noble truth, which is the dukkha nirodha part, which is actually a state of satisfaction as opposed to the dukkha. And that he actually gives a method for doing this called the Eightfold Noble Method. I reluctantly don't call it a path, because the whole Western mentality of a path, again, is going to get a destination.
I see, yeah.
All right, it's not a path at all. It's one foot at a time, one step at a time.
Yeah.
It's not like a bicycle path where it's got a destination. That in fact, it's kind of like a method in the sense that all you have to do is open the door. And how do you open the door? You put the key in, you turn it, you turn the latch, and you push the door open. That's all there is to it. But the problem when it's a path is that the door is miles away, perhaps thousands of miles away, maybe even hundreds of years away. But in fact, the door, the satisfaction, is right in front of us. All right. And so this is where the Eightfold Noble Method comes in. And that's the first thing, is right view. Now, right noble view is not a view in the sense of a noun, like a worldview or a viewpoint. It's actually a verb in the sense of viewing, looking. And this is the problem with the translation, that Westerners tend to see it, because then they're already past and future oriented with rebirth and reincarnation. The society does past and future, and so they will look at right noble view in the sense of past and future. But actually, what right view is something you're doing right now. You're looking, you're investigating, you're checking things out. And then the second item on the list, which actually comes first in practicality, is that you have to remember to investigate. You have to remember to look. If you don't remember to look, then you're just going to continue ignorantly with your greed and your ill will, winding up being dissatisfied, which is the way that you've been practicing meditation. You don't like the meditation, but you're hoping to get some advantage out of it later. All right, so that's the second noble truth for you right there.
And how do you get better at remembering?
Well, you have to practice remembering.
Okay.
That all three of these things are skills. And in fact, the third one, which is the really important one, and I call it important, even though the Buddha says right view comes first, when in fact, in the actual practice, remembering to look comes first. But then the point that's so often missed in Western meditation, and to a degree in Eastern meditation also, is taking the right noble effort to make a change. And when you see that you're not getting the benefit out of your meditation right here now, that means you need to make a change. You need to start putting in the right noble effort to come out of your dissatisfaction and come into a state of satisfaction. So remember to look at what you're doing and then make a change for the better. Any thought that you do have could be improved.
And it takes effort to change a habitual thought pattern, I guess, right? Like,
absolutely. That habitual thought pattern is like your truck stuck in a rut. When the truck is not stuck in a rut, it's out on the highway, it can cruise 100 miles an hour. When you're stuck in a rut, the wheels are spinning, you're going nowhere. That's habit for you, stuck in a rut. And so you're going to have to take the effort to come out of the rut. Guess what? You'll find yourself right back in the rut again. So you got to take the right effort to get them out of it again, over and over and over again, looking for solid ground so that you don't keep getting stuck in the same old ruts over and over and over again. So this is a repetitive process, but it has value right when you're doing it. Getting the truck out of the mud, getting it unstuck, and now you can go someplace. But if you're ignorant and not watching where you're going to wind right back up in another rut.
Yeah.
Never mind, get out of this rut too.
Yeah.
And then proceed directly. And then you'll wind up in another rut. All right? And so we have to continuously practice to remember to look and see that we're stuck in a rut right now. Let's get out of that rut. Let's take the effort to come out of the rut. So the way that we would look at it then is the coming out of the rut means that we're changing our unwholesome thoughts into wholesome thoughts. We start having thoughts about right here, right now, instead of thoughts about the past and the future. You can in fact see that this is the middle way. The past is at one extreme, rebirth and reincarnation. And the future, especially the deep, dark future, is on the other extreme. Again, more rebirth, reincarnation. But the middle path is right here, right now. And this is where we need to practice, is the middle way, the middle path. The path between the two extremes.
Mm.
All right. Now, let me give you another example of the middle path so that we can get on with it. That when we were children, we were taught a lot of supposed to, shoulds, woulds, coulds. One of the things that kids are constantly being taught by their elders is to go to school and not like it. To do what you're told to do and not like it. Do your homework, but don't like it.
Mm.
So we wind up with very, very few math geniuses because most kids that do math don't like it. Because they're taught to not like it. They're taught that it's hard. Guess what? They say the same things about meditation. And so people don't like it, but they do it anyway because they're supposed to get some value out of it. And then they do the practice and they don't like it. So this is what you're doing, that you're doing what you were told to do and you don't like it. Can you see that you're doing that and make that change so that you do start to like it? You can start telling yourself the kinds of thoughts that you need to tell yourself to begin to like it.
Mm.
Wholesome thoughts, happy thoughts, thoughts about I can do this, thoughts about, oh wow, right now I don't have anything to do, no place to go, nothing to do. I can just sit here and enjoy myself instead of struggling trying to get something that I don't have.
Yeah. And I think also I just live such a distracted life, like everyone else does on this planet, or most people anyway, but it's when you come into meditation having, you know, spent the day sending emails or whatever, watching YouTube videos or whatever it might be, and you have such a busy mind that then it's quite difficult to
calling it difficult makes it difficult. What's happening is that you can have a happy thought and then you remember something about the YouTube, or you'll go back into the same state of mind that you were in the YouTube.
Yeah.
And instead of just saying aha, I see that, and then come back into a state of relaxation, they call it hard. They're creating the difficulty because they want it to be different than it is. They want it to be easy. And because they want it to be easy, they're making it hard. And the fact is it's easy enough. Just change.
When
you see yourself scatterbrained, come back and say, okay, I don't have any place to go. There's no reason to scatter.
Yeah.
I don't have to concentrate. That what I need to do is just come back to happy thoughts. That's concentration enough.
And when you say happy thoughts, because
let me
give
you a dozen as examples. Wow, this is nice. Oh, wow, this is a happy breath. Oh, I'm really glad I'm alive. Wow, I got no place to go and nothing to do. Oh, the body is comfortable. Oh, I don't have any fear. I can feel safe and secure. I can feel comfortable. I can feel satisfied.
How does, because when you think of meditation, you think of focusing on the breath, right? So
Buddha did not use the word focus. This is the Western mentality, and it comes from a lack of understanding of the word samadhi. Samadhi has been overly wrongly translated as concentration or focus, to where really the word samadhi means unification. So I offer you frozen concentrated orange juice. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Frozen.
If you're concentrated enough, it's called tang. It's a powder because you took all the water out.
Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody eat raw tang? Does anybody eat frozen concentrated orange? No. What do? We put it back whole again. We add the water back in. So people who are concentrating in their meditation are trying to take the juice out when in fact they should be giving it more juice. They're practicing exactly backwards.
Mm.
Now what we can do is talk about repeating it. Repeat over and over and over again, and that has a kind of a quality of focus. It has a kind of a quality of concentration. But when people use the words focus and concentration, they're missing the point.
Yeah.
What we really need to do is remember to keep coming back, to keep doing it over and over and over again. And what is that? Having wholesome thoughts. And when you see that you have an unwholesome thought, you can have a wholesome thought about that unwholesome thought.
Yeah.
All right. When you see an unwholesome thought, the Buddha, actually, he had his own method. He would say, aha, I see you, Myra. Now, aha, I see you, Myra, is a wholesome thought after he has seen the unwholesome thought. So this is how we practice it. We begin to have over and over and over again one wholesome thought after another after another.
Yeah.
That's the way to practice. One wholesome thought after another.
And where is the body, the awareness of the body? Because that you can have that pleasant abiding. You can have that pleasant sensation of, you know, awareness of your body, right? So how does that sit?
Actually, in taking an object, we have four different groups of objects. We have the body, we have the feelings, we have the mental states and our attitudes, and then we have the moment-by-moment thoughts, which is the Buddha Dhamma, the Kaya Nupassana, the Vedana Nupassana, the Chitta Nupassana, and the Dhamma Nupassana, the four foundations of mindfulness, and all four of them are within the context of Anapanasati.
Okay.
To gladden the mind, to relax the body, to have wholesome thoughts, to change your attitude, and then to change your feelings. You have to change all four of them. And sitting for long periods of time and making the body uncomfortable is not what the Buddha recommended. He recommended to have the body peaceful and quiet.
Yeah.
Not stressed.
Yeah.
And if we can keep the body unstressed, in order to do that requires the mind to be unstressed.
Yeah.
And in order to make the mind unstressed, to make the mind gladdened, wholesome, we need to talk to ourselves about it and start having wholesome thoughts. So wholesome thoughts will lead to a wholesome mind and a wholesome body. If you're thinking about the body and talking to yourself about the body, and these three things together eventually will bring in the vedana, so that you begin to feel relaxed. You begin to feel safe and secure. But you have to put the body in a safe, secure place. This is why the Buddha recommends seclusion. Go to an empty hut. Go to an empty room. Don't go around other people who are causing all kinds of noise and desires and whatever. Get yourself into a place where you've left that all behind, only to find mentally you brought it with you.
Yeah.
So now you begin to leave it behind mentally and come into wholesome mind states by talking to ourselves, gladdening the mind.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
You go practice that. I also don't recommend sitting long periods of time, because few people have the mental capability or the attention span to do that. It's better to do it often, whenever you think about it, at least six times a day. Spend about 10 minutes six times a day. That'll put an hour in.
Yeah.
If you're putting in 2 hours of meditation, then do this 12 times a day.
Okay. I'll try it.
Every hour, sit down and do happy thoughts for a while.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, what a relief it is. Wow, everything is okay. Not a worry in the world. Everything is hunky-dory.
Yeah. Okay.
So start having happy thoughts.
Yeah.
Don't try to get anything other than just the happy thoughts, that right now this is good enough.
Yeah.
And as you develop these skills, you'll get more and more satisfied, but you have to practice satisfaction. And what you've been practicing is dissatisfaction. So now it's time to start practicing correctly. Start practicing everything's good enough. Everything is okay. Everything is comfortable. Everything is fine. No worries. No problems. Wow, what a nice moment this is. It's good enough. Practice being good enough. Yeah. Not spectacular. Not terrible. Those are two extremes. Just in the middle path, good enough.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Call me again.
I will do.
Call me again.
I'll work on that, and I'll definitely call you again.
All right. We'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.